ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So today we are going to discuss about the fourth chapter of the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. We are discussing chapter one now, just to get a proper understanding of Srimad Bhagavatam. The fourth chapter is describing the appearance of Sri Narada. So the discussion is going on. Where is the discussion going on? Bhagavatam was spoken. This aspect of Bhagavatam was spoken by whom? Srila Suta Goswami. To whom did he speak? To the 60,000 sages who assembled in Naimisharanya. And so it was spoken at Naimisharanya. Where is Naimisharanya? Naimisharanya is, you can say, is in the Uttar Pradesh. Not too far from here, actually. Madhya Pradesh, and then north of Madhya Pradesh is Uttar Pradesh. So Naimisharanya also is considered to be the center of the universe. If universe is seen as a wheel, then the hub of that wheel is Naimisharanya. So the sages there assembled in Naimisharanya to perform 1,000-year-long sacrifice. So there, one morning, they requested Suta Goswami to enlighten them about what needs to be done. The condition of the universe, condition of this planet they could foresee was going to be very, very difficult. Dharma will be practically lost. And now how to save that situation? Because when dharma is lost, the whole situation becomes extremely chaotic and extremely miserable. When one follows dharma, his life becomes joyful. If one rejects dharma, his life becomes devoid of joy and full of misery. So they could foresee that, and they decided that something needs to be done. Therefore, they were performing that 1,000-year-long sacrifice. Sahasram samam asata. 1,000-year-long sacrifice. Then they requested Suta Goswami to speak, and then Suta Goswami started to speak. And in the previous chapter, Suta Goswami described how Krishna is the source of all incarnations. Suta Goswami described how many incarnations of Krishna in the previous chapter? 22 incarnations. And then what did he say? That there are innumerable incarnations of the Lord. Not only the 22 incarnations. Sometimes people think because there are Dashavatara Stotram, there are only 10 incarnations of the Lord. But here we can see that Śrūta Gosvāmī is describing about 22 incarnations of the Lord. And then he makes the point that these are just to give some idea of different incarnations of the Lord, but actually there are innumerable incarnations. Like we can see, even the Purushavatar. Purushavatar, there are three types, three incarnations, three different Purushavatars. Karanadakshaya Vishnu, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, and Kshiradakshaya Vishnu. Now, how did Kshiradakshaya Vishnu expanded himself? He expanded himself in every single living entity, as well as in every single atom. Andantarastha, Paramanuchayantarastha. In every atom also the Lord has expanded himself. So, he is everywhere. Is everywhere. He is even in every single atom. So that is how inconceivable his potency is. Ekapasau rachayitam jagadanda koti koti shashesha vasudhadi kuti bhinyam. Although he is one, ekapasau rachayitam jagadanda koti. He has created innumerable universes. And then he entered in each universe and also in every single atom of the universe. This is Krishna's inconceivable potency. He is there in the heart of every living entity. That is how inconceivable he is. He is not only in the hearts of his devotees, although he says, Krishna says that, I reside in the heart of my devotees. But actually he is in the heart of everyone, not only in the hearts of human beings, not only in the hearts of animals, birds, reptiles, insects, trees, plants. In every living entity's heart, he is residing. That is how inconceivable he is. And won't it be wonderful to take shelter of him? A person who has such inconceivable potency, and we are always in need of help. We always need help. Every single moment we need help. So won't it be wonderful to take shelter of such a personality who is so powerful, whose potency is so inconceivable? Therefore, the important thing and the intelligent thing to do is to take shelter of Krishna. And we can ask him. If we need something, we can ask him. Prabhupada is saying that if we have to ask something, then we better ask Krishna. Not to any demigods or not to any powerful person. Sometimes we are in need of something. So we go to some powerful person, like the political leaders or big rich man for help. But best thing is to just depend upon Krishna and ask him for his help. Asking for some favor from a demigod and asking for some favor from some material person is the same. Maybe the demigod is a little more powerful. But Prabhupada is saying there is no need to ask from the demigod. Demigod worship is based on that. Dhanam dehi, yasho dehi. Give me money, give me fame, give me long life, give me good health. So, always asking. People worship demigods with their demands. And Prabhupada is discouraging us from doing that. He's saying, no, don't ask them. Don't ask from. Ask from Krishna. There's no harm. And Prabhupada is explaining, just as a son can ask from his father, and there's no harm, rather the father becomes happy. My son is asking from me. Similarly, there is no harm in asking from Krishna. Rather, Krishna will be also happy. And instead of asking from the demigods or asking from somebody else, he's asking from me. Then what will happen? Our faith in Krishna will increase. That is the important consideration. We ask from Krishna and then Krishna gives. Then our faith is increased. Oh, Krishna is there. And in this way, the relationship develops. So, Sutta Goswami described different incarnations of Krishna, and then he pointed out that Krishna is the source of all incarnations. Ete changsha kala pumsha krishnastu bhagavan svara. And not only Sutta Goswami is saying that in Srimad Bhagavatam, this point has been explained elaborately in various other scriptures also. For example, in Brahma Sanghita, describing Ramadi murtishu kala niyamena tishthan nana avataram akarod bhubaneshu kintu Krishna Swayam Samabhavat Paramahpumanja Govindam Adipurusham Tamahamaya. All different incarnations like Ram, Nrisingha, Varaha, Kurma, they are the parts and parts and parts of Krishna. Kala Niyamena Tishthan. Nana Avataram Akarod. In this way Krishna expanded into various incarnations. Kintu, Krishna Swayam Samabhavat Paramah Pumanjo. But Krishna is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that point also has been very nicely established, how Krishna is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. What are the relationship between Krishna and different incarnations? Deeparchireva hi dasantaram abhupetya deepayati vibrita hetu samanadham jastadrigeva hi cha vishnu taya kal vibhati govindam adipurusham tamaham. Just as one lamp lights other lamps, and once the lamps are lit, they have the same potency. All the lamps give out the same amount of light. Yet, the first lamp is the lamp that lit the other lamps. That is the relationship between Krishna and different incarnations. All the incarnations of Krishna is Krishna himself. Have the same amount of potency, whether they display it or not. For example, as Lord Ram, Krishna has 64 qualities. However, Lord Ramchandra has 60 qualities. Like, different incarnations may not display the full potency. But, they are endowed with the same amount of potency. For example, the super soul. Super soul is just standing there in our heart. Inactive. He's just standing there as a statue. Just like in the altar. On the altar, the deity. They're just standing there. They are not displaying the potency and other qualities as such. Like super soul in the heart is standing there and simply watching what we are doing. Upadrashta and Anumanta. Upadrashta means witness. The super soul and the heart, Krishna is simply witnessing all our activities, what we are doing. And Anumanta, and he is sanctioning, fulfilling, sanctioning our desire. We desire, and he is the one who decides what should be given to us and what should not be given to us. He is deciding how we should also get the results of our actions. In this way, Krishna is just seated in the heart. There he is not displaying various qualities as such. Most of the qualities are not displayed. Shaunaka Rishi then said, "O Suta Goswami, you are the most fortunate and respected of all those who can speak and recite. Please relate the pious message of Srimad Bhagavatam, which was spoken by the great and powerful sage Sukadeva Goswami." In what period and what place was this first began? And why was this taken up? From where did Krishna Dvaipayan Vyas, the great sage, get the inspiration to compile this literature? Vyasdev's son was a great devotee. Who is the son of Vyasdev? Srila Shukadeva Goswami. An equibalanced monist, whose mind was always concentrated in monism. He was transcendental to mundane activities, but being unexposed, he appeared like an ignorant person. So these are the questions that Shaunaka Rishi is asking. Shaunaka Rishi, as the head of the assembled sages in Naimisharanya, is asking the questions on behalf of the sages of Naimisharanya. While Sri Vyasdev was following his son, beautiful young damsels who were bathing naked covered their bodies with cloth, although Sri Vyasdev himself was not naked. But they had not done so when his son had passed. The sage inquired about this, and the young ladies replied that his son was purified and, when looking at them, made no distinction between male and female. But the sage made such distinction. Jai Shri Shri Radha Madan Mohan Ki, Jai Shri Shri Krishna Balaram Ki, Jai Shri Shri Gaur Nithai Ki. How was he, Srila Sukadev, the son of Vyas, recognized by the citizens when he entered the city of Hastinapur, now Delhi, after wandering in the province of Kuru and Jangala, appearing like a madman, dumb and retarded? So Sukadeva Goswami, although a young boy, he was just wandering around like a madman. He was in a stage which is called Abhudhuta. They do not relate to the material. They are completely absorbed, they are completely situated in the spiritual nature. So that's why it is, they do not, or their activities cannot be understood by the people of this material age. Like Sukadeva Goswami, he was not wearing any clothes. He did not have any awareness of his surroundings, like a madman. Now, a madman, he, because he completely is out of his mind, he lost, out of his mind means his mind doesn't function. His mind doesn't function. Therefore, he cannot, whatever he sees, his sense perception are not related to the mind. So he doesn't see, or he doesn't register what he's seeing. People are there around him, but he doesn't register them. He doesn't hear them. People are abusive. People insult him. But he can't register that they're speaking badly about him or to him. Why? Because he can't relate to this nature. He lost his intelligence and faculties of his mind. That's a madman. Whereas an avadhuta also acts like a madman, apparently. But is an avadhuta a madman? No. You see, madman cannot relate to this nature, their surrounding, or his surrounding, and an avadhuta also cannot relate to his surrounding, this nature. But actually they are two opposite poles. A madman is, he doesn't have the intelligence and ability to relate to this nature. Whereas an avadhuta or a paramahamsa is transcendental to the material. So therefore, he doesn't relate to this material. Or in simple words, you can say a madman cannot relate to the material nature. Whereas a paramahamsa doesn't relate to the material nature. He is beyond that. He doesn't have any relationship with this material nature. He is another being. Now, if we say the material nature is here, then a madman is in a is below material reality, whereas a paramahamsa is beyond material reality. One is below and the other is beyond. And two extremes sometimes appear to be alike, but they are opposite. For example, the sunrise and sunset. Doesn't it look alike? Don't they look alike? Sunrise and sunset look exactly alike, but they are opposite. So, Sukadeva Goswami's nature was like that, but people are thinking that he is a madman. And just the way people behave to a madman, they were trying to do that to Sukadeva Goswami. And not only to Sukadeva Goswami, this is the case we have seen with many other exalted personalities. For example, Rishabhdev is another personality who did not have any awareness of his surroundings. He did not relate to this nature around him. But it should not be done artificially. One should not imitate this exalted personality. Sukadeva Goswami was in a paramhamsa stage. Therefore, he didn't wear any clothes. He was moving around naked. He did not have any awareness of his surroundings. He did not care what people spoke to him. Now, that doesn't mean that walking naked will make one a paramahamsa. That's what actually happened. Imitating Rishabhdev, there was a king in the province of Konka and Benka. When Rishabhdev was there, passing through that region, thousands of people were following him. And the king thought that, oh, I am a king and people don't worship me like that, treat me like that. This person is attracting so many people, but he is moving about naked. So he thought that if I do that, then people also will consider me to be a great person. So this kind of imitation is undesirable. One should not imitate. It should be done as a natural development. Therefore, devotional service is extremely practical. It is practical. It is. Just be yourself. You don't have to be somebody else. Just be yourself and become a devotee. Be surrendered to Krishna. Be yourself. It is said that Maharaj Parikshit is a great first-class devotee of the Lord and that his birth and activities are all wonderful. Please tell us about him. He was a great emperor and possessed all the opulences of his acquired kingdom. He was so exalted that he was increasing the prestige of the Pandu dynasty. Why did he give up everything to sit down on the bank of the Ganges and fast until death? He was such a great emperor that all his enemies would come and bow down at his feet and surrender all their wealth for their own benefit. He was full of youth and strength, and he possessed insuperable kingly opulence. Why did he want to give up everything, including his life? So who is asking this question? Shaunaka Rishi to Sukadev Goswami. So he asked first about Sukadev Goswami. So they heard, Shaunaka Rishi heard about Bhagavatam spoken by Sukadev Goswami to Parikshit Maharaj. So now he is requesting him to tell him the Bhagavatam, to recite or explain the Srimad Bhagavatam. So he is asking about Sukadev Goswami and now he is asking about Parikshit Maharaj. And these questions are quite relevant. Why did Parikshit Maharaj do that? Why did Parikshit Maharaj do that? Gave up his kingdom and went to the bank of the Ganges. Although he was such a powerful king, now why did he do that? And on the bank of the Ganges, he sat down to give up his life. Why did he want to give up everything, including his life? Those who are devoted to the cause of the personality of Godhead live only for the welfare, development and happiness of others. They do not live for any selfish interest. So even though the emperor Parikshit was free from all attachment to worldly possessions, how could he give up his mortal body, which was shelter for others? We know that you are expert in the meaning of all subjects, except for some portions of the Vedas, and thus you can clearly explain the answers to all the questions we have just put to you. Then Suta Goswami started to explain. That Suta Goswami said, when the second millennium overlapped the third, the great sage Vasudeva was born to Parashar in the womb of Satyavati, the daughter of Vasu. So this is an important point actually. There is a chronological order of 4 millennium. There, Satya Yuga, Dwapar Yuga, Treta Yuga and Kali Yuga. The normal chronological sequence is Satya, Dwapar, Treta and Kali. But sometimes there is overlapping. So during the regime of Vaivarshata Manu, there was an overlapping of the 28th round of the 4 millennium, and the 3rd millennium appeared prior to the 2nd. So, Vaivarshata Manvantar, there are 14 Manus in a day of Brahma. And the 7th Manu is Vaivarshata Manu. In Vaivarshata Manu's time, the 28th Chatur Yuga, in the 28th Chatur Yuga, the overlapping between Treta Yuga and Dwapar Yuga takes place. Although Treta Yuga comes after Dwapar Yuga, but in that millennium, in that Chatur Yuga, the Treta Yuga came before and Dwapar Yuga came after. From the name of the Yuga also it becomes clear. Dwapar means second and Treta means third. So Satya is the first, then second Yuga actually Dwapar Yuga. Then how come? It is Treta. Because it is, there was an overlapping. And when in the Vaivarshata Manvantar, the 28th Manvantar, in 28th Chatur Yuga, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, appears in the Dwapar Yuga, when it overlaps. And Dwapar Yuga comes after Treta Yuga, it overlaps, and then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes in the following Kali Yuga. Once upon a time, Vasudev, as the sun rose, took his morning ablution in the waters of the Saraswati and sat alone to concentrate. The great sage Vasudev saw anomalies in the duties of the millennium. This happens on the earth in different ages due to unseen forces in the course of time. So Vasudev one morning saw that there was some anomaly, there was some disorder, undesirable happening. The great sage, who was fully equipped with knowledge, could see through his transcendental vision the deterioration of everything material due to the influence of the age. Which age? Kali. He could also see that the faithless people in general would be reduced in duration of life and would be impatient due to lack of goodness. Thus, he contemplated for the welfare of man in all statuses and orders of life. He saw that the sacrifices mentioned in the Vedas were means by which the people occupation could be purified, and to simplify the process, he divided the one Veda into 4 in order to expand them among men. The 4 divisions of original sources of knowledge. What is the original sources of knowledge? The Vedas. Was divided into 4 divisions, were made separately. But the historical facts and authentic stories mentioned in Puranas are called the 5th Vedas. After the Vedas were divided into four divisions, Poila Rishi became the professor of Rig Veda, Jaimini the professor of Sham Veda, and Vaishampayan alone became glorified by the Jajur Veda. The Sumanta Muni Angira, who was very devotedly engaged, was entrusted with Atharva Veda, and my father, Romoharshana, was entrusted with Puranas and historical records. So four sages were given the four Vedas. And Romoharshan Shruta was given the Purana, was entrusted with the knowledge of the Purana. All these learned scholars in their turn rendered their entrusted Vedas into their many disciples, grand disciples and great grand disciples, and thus the respective branches of the followers of the Vedas came into being. Thus the great sage Vyasadeva, who is very kind to the ignorant masses, edited the Vedas so they might be assimilated by less intellectual men. Out of compassion, the great sage thought it is wise that this would enable men to achieve the ultimate goal of life. Thus he compiled the great historical narration called Mahabharata for women, laborers and friends of the twice born. O twice born Brahmanas, still his mind was not satisfied, although he engaged himself in working for the total welfare of all people. Thus the sage, being dissatisfied at heart, at once began to reflect, because he knew the essence of religion, and he said within, I have under strict disciplinary vows unpretentiously worshipped the Vedas, the spiritual master, and the altar of sacrifice. I have also abided by the rulings and have shown the import of disciplic succession through the explanation of Mahabharata. Jai Sri Sri Krishna Balaram ki, Jai Sri Sri Radha Madan Mohan Lalita Vishaka ki, Jai Sri Sri Gaur Nitai ki, Srila Prabhupada ki. So Vyasadeva was, even after doing so much, dividing the Vedas and the Puranas separately, and then writing the history in the form of Mahabharata for the general mass, so to say. For the scholars, there were the Vedas and Puranas and Upanishads. But for ordinary people, those who are intellectually not so advanced, for them he gave Mahabharata. But still his heart was not satisfied. And he began to reflect, I have, under strict disciplinary vows, unpretentiously worshipped the Vedas, the spiritual master, and the altar of sacrifice. I have also abided by the rulings and have shown the import of disciplic succession through the explanation of the Mahabharata, by which even women, Sudras and others, friends of the twice born, can see the path of religion. I am feeling incomplete, though I am myself. I myself am fully equipped with everything required by the Vedas. As mentioned before, this may be because I did not specifically point out the devotional service of the Lord, which is dear both to perfect beings and to the infallible Lord. King Ba Bhagavata Dharma na prayena nirupitaha priya paramahamsana ta eva hi achyuta priya. So this was Vyasadeva's important consideration. King ba bhagavata dharma means the dharma that directly indicates the worship of the Supreme Personality of God. In Vedas, the other processes are indirectly applied to the Lord. But Bhagavad Dharma is direct. Worship or direct approach, direct devotion to the Supreme Personality of God. So which means devotion of service. So Bhagavad Dharma means Bhakti Yoga, Bhagavad Bhakti. So he wondered, Vyasadeva wondered, Kingba Bhagavata Dharma na prayena nirupita. I have not clearly pointed out the importance of Bhagavad Dharma. And this which is Priya Paramahamsanam. Priya means very dear. To Paramahamsanam, I described about the Paramahamsas, the most exalted devotees of the Lord. Ta eva achyuta priya. Ta eva hi achyuta priya. And it is also dear to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, achyuta. This Bhagavad Dharma, which is dear to the devotees of the Lord, not only devotees, but the most exalted devotees of the Lord, and Bhagavad Dharma, which is dear to even the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Is it because I did not narrate it clearly or describe about it? Nirupita, properly indicate, direct it. Is that why that my heart is dissatisfied? As mentioned before, Narad reached the cottage of Krishna Dvaipayan Vyas at the banks of the Saraswati, just as Vyas was regretting his defect. At the auspicious arrival of Sri Narada, Sri Vyasadeva got up respectfully and worshipped him, giving him veneration equal to that given to Brahmaji, the creator. So, thus ends the fourth chapter of the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Appearance of Sri Narada. So this chapter in this way describes how Narad Muni came to Vyasadeva, the appearance of Sri Narada. And the next chapter will describe the discussion between Vyasadeva and Narad Muni, and how Narad Muni instructed Vyasadeva about glorifying the Supreme Personality. So, did everybody understand about the chapter, that fourth chapter? Fourth chapter is very simple. First few chapters were quite complex, full of important instructions, but this is more or less just narration. The sages of Naimisharanya, headed by Shaunaka, asked Sutta Goswami to describe how Sukadev Goswami, who was the most exalted personality, he was wandering around like a madman. And then Parikshit Maharaj, who was such an exalted personality, such a powerful king, he was the glory of the Pandu dynasty, and he was the ruler of the entire earth planet. He was so powerful, and he was so noble and generous in his nature. Why did he all of a sudden give up his kingdom and went to the bank of Ganga and decided to give up his life? And what did Sukadeva Goswami instructed So then Narad Muni, then Suta Goswami started to describe from the beginning. What is the description of Suta Goswami? Vasudev appeared in this particular millennium when Treta Yuga and Dwapar Yuga overlap each other. And one morning Vasudev noticed what would happen to the mankind in this age of Kali. So Vasudev considered that these people will not have very long duration of life. They will be very lazy, unintelligent, and their mentality will be perverted. So how will these people ever derive spiritual benefit? Dharma will be lost in this age. So without the Vedic scriptures, dharma will be lost. And how will people derive their spiritual benefit? So considering that, Vasudev divided the Vedas into four branches: Rig, Sham, Yaju and Atharva. Then he entrusted those Vedas to four of his disciples. Poila, Jaimini, and Vaishampayan, and who was the he gave Rigved to Poila, Shambed to Jaimini, Jajurved to Vaishampayan, and Angira, Atharva Ved to Angira, and the fifth Veda, which describes the history and narration of the Puranas, to Romaharshan Sutta. Romaharshan Sutta was the father of Ugrashrava Sutta, who is describing now. Romaharshan Sutta was killed by Balaram. Balaram was upset with Romaharshan Sutta. Balaram, when Romaharshan Sutta was reciting, he was instructing the Puranas, narrating the Puranas to the sages. At that time, Balaram appeared there. And everyone offered respect to Balaram, but Romaharshan Sutta did not get up and show respect. So Balaram just took a grass and touched him, and Romaharshan Sutta was dead. But his son, Ugrashrava, was a great devotee of the Lord. So when Vasudev divided the Vedas in this way, but still his heart was not satisfied. He was feeling deep discontentment in his heart. Therefore, he was wondering, since he did not describe Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Dharma properly, clearly, is that why his heart is not satisfied? Bhagavad Dharma, that is very dear to the Paramahamsas and very dear to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And at that time when he was thinking that way, Narad Muni appeared there. And Vasudev offered him great respect to Narad Muni and greeted him. So, does anybody have any question? Yes, Parul. Krishna and his incarnations are non-different. You can either ask Krishna or you can ask. Say for example, for protection, we ask Nrisingadev. Right? Or we can also ask Krishna, 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 Rakshamam. Krishna, please protect me. Right? Totally surrender to Krishna means there is no other endeavor, no other desire. Anya bhilashita shunnam. Abhilasha means desire. Anya means different or no other. When there is no other desire but to serve Krishna and no other recourse to take shelter of other than Krishna. Akole ishwar, abhushya rakhive Krishna vishyash pala. To have that implicit faith that Krishna will give me, Krishna will protect me. And accepting Krishna as the Goptritte Bharan, accepting Krishna as my only Lord and Master. So that is 100% surrender. Sometimes, say for example, say one has become sick, right? And he goes to a doctor, right? But another person who became sick, and he thinks, why should I go to a doctor? I'll simply depend upon Krishna. Right? So, he simply depends upon Krishna. He doesn't take any other course. In this respect, I just thought of two persons. Srila Prabhupada, he didn't want the doctors to come and treat him. Prabhupada's thing was, what will these doctors do? He simply wanted to depend upon Krishna. And another person is Prabhupada's sister, Pishima. Once they were in a parikrama in Navadvip. And Prabhupada's sister's son got cholera. Cholera is a very deadly disease. I mean, now cholera is actually practically eradicated. But there was a time when there would be epidemic of cholera. Thousands of people would die just out of cholera. There was no treatment, no medicine. Cholera means death. And so Prabhupada's sister's son got cholera while they were having parikrama. And naturally everyone was very worried. But Prabhupada's sister said they give him some, she just took some charanamrita and gave the charanamrita to her son, and her son became cured. And from that time in Gauriya Math, Prabhupada's sister became known as the mother of that son. I forgot his name. Actually, generally in India, the mother is known, a woman is known by the eldest son as the eldest son's mother. Like if the eldest son's name, whatever, let's say if the eldest son's name is Chandra, she'll be known as Chandra's mother. But in Prabhupada's sister's case,
In Gaudiya Math, she became known as the mother of that son, who was not the eldest. She was younger. He was younger. But the whole incident was created such a sensation that from that time Prabhupada's sister became known as the mother of that son. So this is another instance of depending upon Krishna and no one else. Yes, Raghav Pandit. क्या होते
हैं
ओवरलैपिंग ऑफ यू ओके या दैट व्हेन दिस ओवरलैपिंग टेक्स प्लेस एट दैट टाइम इन दैट दापोजुगा कृष्ण कम्स वी आर वेरी फॉर्चुनेट. And we are even more fortunate because not only we appeared in this Kali Yuga, but we appeared after Srila Prabhupada came. Right? Say, there had been so many people in Ujjain, but before Prabhupada came, they didn't get to know about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But now, you all got to know about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. How? Because of Prabhupada. Even in India, people did not have this good fortune. What to speak of people abroad, in America and Europe and other continents. It's because of Srila Prabhupada's mercy that people are getting Krishna consciousness. And as the time passes, people will get more and more opportunities to become Krishna conscious.
He was caught up, and Narada Dev said to him, like that, every guru can speak out his
topic. Well, I guess it will depend upon the intensity of one's desire. Like, it is Narada Muni actually comes. Whenever somebody becomes qualified, Narada Muni comes to him. Like, for example, Ratnakar. Balmiki was a bandit, was a dacoit, Dashu Ratnakar. But Narada Muni appeared to him and he became a devotee. Right? He was not asking he was not perturbed as such. But Narada Muni came and gave him his mercy. Similarly, Mrigari, Narada Muni bestowed his mercy. So the guru will come, but it will be up to the individual to take advantage of the spiritual master. Yes, give him the...
Lord Bhagavan Bhagavata, one of the Manishma of Lord Krishna, then why does the Buddhist neglect or reject the Vedas?
Yeah, very good question. Lord Buddha also is an incarnation of Krishna. Then why Buddhism is disregarded by us? Actually, Lord Buddha didn't come to give devotion. But Lord Buddha actually came to stop the demoniac activities that was going on in the name of the Vedas. Nindasi yagya viderahaha shruti jatam sadaya hridaya darshita poshu ghatam keshabadhrita buddha sharira. You know this? No? This is from, you know, Nrisingha prayer, Namaste Narasimhaya. No, Tavakara Kamalo Bari Nakham Adhuta Shingam. This is from a composition of Jayadev, a great devotee of the Lord, who wrote a book called Gita Govinda. And the invocation of Gita Govinda, he gave these Dasavatar stotra. And one of the incarnations he described there is Lord Buddha. In Bhagavatam also, it has been described, the appearance of Lord Buddha. And this is also, we can consult this also. 24. So, tato kalo samprabritte sanmohaya suradvisham. Sanmohaya means to bewilder. Suradvisham means the demons. So, then in the beginning of Kali Yuga, the Lord will appear as Lord Buddha, the son of Anjana in the province of Gaya, just for the purpose of deluding those who are envious of the faithful thief. Envious of the faithful thief means atheist, right? Demon. Surat Visam, those who are offensive to the Suras, the demigods, Asuras. So now you can see why Lord Buddha came. So his teaching was to nindasi jagga videra, to criticize the instructions of the Vedas regarding the animal sacrifice. He came to stop animal sacrifice that was going on in the name of the Vedas. So he came to stop that. Therefore, Lord Buddha's teaching is not to be accepted. Because those teachings of Buddha were simply to bewilder the demons. So why should the devotees accept that teaching? The teachings that were meant to bewilder the demons. And also another important consideration here is that Buddha did not really speak about God. Whenever he was asked about God, Supreme Personality of Godhead, he was silent. He didn't say anything. Right? So Buddha's teachings were not really the teachings of the Lord. But one can worship Lord Buddha as Krishna's incarnation. Then that is good. We don't disrespect Lord Buddha. Lord Buddha is Krishna's incarnation. But his teachings are to be rejected. Just as Shankaracharya's teachings have to be rejected. He is Lord Shiva, but his teachings to be rejected. Why? Because his teachings are bewildering. He also came to bewilder the demons. Hare Krishna. Yes.
This is described how Vyasa was running after his son Sukadeva Goswami in order to give him some training in spiritual knowledge. And it's described that Sukadeva Goswami was when they thought he had a soul. So my question is about the term thought he had a soul. Because it sounds like on his own, like any of them, when he comes to a certain level of realization.
Yeah, good. It has been described here also that Sukadeva Goswami was an impersonalist. He was a Brahmavadi at first, right? And first consideration is that Vasudev considered that my son is leaving home without being properly properly educated and sanctified without being properly sanctified. So that was his concern. And Vasudev did also consider that unless and until one is situated on the devotional platform, his life will not be perfect. Therefore, although Sukadeva Goswami saw the futility of material nature, futility of one's existence in this nature, but his understanding was not complete at that time. At that time, he was an impersonalist, Brahmavadi, not Mayavadi. He was a Brahmavadi. The difference between Mayavadi and Brahmavadi, the Brahmavadi is a positive impersonalist, Mayavadi is a negative impersonalist. Brahmavadi will eventually become a devotee, like Sukadeva Goswami, like the four Kumaras. They were Brahmavadis at first, impersonalists at first. They believed in Brahman, but they did not have the understanding of devotional service to the Lord. Service to the Lord. They were just meditating on the Lord and deriving Brahmananda. Right? But they did not have the knowledge of Krishna Sevananda. So that ananda can be derived only by rendering devotional service, which is the highest form of bliss. Therefore, Vasudev actually tricked him to come back home and instructed him on Srimad Bhagavatam. That is how Sukadeva Goswami got Srimad Bhagavatam. He left home, but then he was brought back. That also has been described not in Srimad Bhagavatam, I think in some Upanishad, not Upanishad, some Puran, I'm forgetting which Puran it was, maybe Brahma Vaivarta Puran or Vishnu Puran. Sukadev, you see, Vasudev, in order to bring Sukadev home, Sukadev back to him, he sent some of his disciples to the forest. When they used to go to forest to collect wood, he asked them to recite the glories of the Supreme Personality of God. And on hearing that, Sukadeva Goswami became attracted. And he wanted to know where they got this. And then they told him about Vasudev, and that's how Sukadeva Goswami was brought to Vasudev. And Vasudev then gave him Srimad Bhagavatam. And then he recited this Srimad Bhagavatam, or explained Srimad Bhagavatam to Parikshit Maharaj. Alright? Does it answer your question, or? Right, he was self-realized with Brahman realization, but not self-realized with Bhagavat realization. So for Bhagavat realization, say by birth one can be Brahman realized or even Bhagavat realized, but the custom is that one must approach a bona fide spiritual master to receive the seed of devotion. Brahmanda bhramite kono bhagyoban jeev guru krishna prasade pai bhakti lata bij. One receives bhakti lata bij. But there may be exceptions also, because one may continue from previous life. One such exception actually is Jadabharat. We don't see that Jadabharat was duly initiated, but he had the Bhagavat realization. He started to speak, and he started to speak that to King Rahuvana. And it has been described in Srimad Bhagavatam, he did not go through the process of initiation. So some cases like that may be there, but they are exceptional. Now, exceptions shouldn't become the standard. The standard should be followed. And that standard has been established by Krishna himself. When he came, he took initiation. Of course, the question is that initiation can be Diksha Parampara, Diksha initiation, or even Shiksha initiation. For example, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave Shiksha to many devotees, like the Kurma Brahman. He instructed him, go and instruct Krishna consciousness to everybody. And on my order, you become a spiritual master. So he didn't give him Diksha initiation, but he gave him instruction, Shiksha. Yes, Jamanapriya? Yeah, take the mic.
In one of the questions you said, you mentioned about envy.
I mentioned about?
Envy.
Envy.
And then you were saying that one, why is one envious? Because when you see something that the other person has that you want, you can envy. And then further, you also talked about happy, how you do devotion service.
Yeah, devotional service takes care of all our impurities. Like, envy, of course, is the last one to get rid of. The most difficult one to get rid of. For example, lust, greed, anger. Right? It has been described that Lord Shiva conquered lust, but he became angry at Kamdev. He conquered lust, but he had difficulty conquering anger. Right? Anger, illusion, envy, and the pride. Lust is the envy. Therefore, in Srimad Bhagavatam, it has been described the non-envious. When one is free from envy, we have to understand that he has become free from all the other impurities of the heart. Right? So heart has become completely purified. And ultimately, you see, it is through the Vaidhi Bhakti that we will become free from all these. But when we become free, when our heart becomes completely purified, then in that purified heart, the love for the Lord will develop. So the thing is that by devotional service, envy will be overcome. How? What is actually the cause of envy? Cause of envy is, you can say, false ego. Misidentification. I am the controller. I am the ruler. I am the Lord. I am the enjoyer. But when you realize that I am actually not the enjoyer, I am not the controller, I am not the Lord and Master. Rather, I am the servant. Then there won't be any room for envy. You get that point? I am the enjoyer. Everything is meant for my enjoyment. Why don't I have this? Why he has it? Right? That is envy. Why he has it? Why not me? Right? And I develop this feeling because I am considering myself to be the Lord and Master. But when I recognize that I am not the enjoyer, Krishna is the enjoyer. then I will not have this tendency of why he has it, I don't have it. Rather, then the mood will be, let Krishna have everything. Everything is meant for Krishna's enjoyment. Then also we don't feel that, yes, it is meant for Krishna's enjoyment, so I must get it for him. Why this karmi has that? He's a thief. He's stealing Krishna's property and he's enjoying. Then the tendency to get everything for Krishna is not a result of envy. You get the point? It is not envy, because we are putting Krishna in the center. It is not envy. It is originally belongs to Krishna. Like, for example, when you recognize that somebody has stolen something and you try to retrieve that and give it back to the proper proprietor, is it envy? No, it is a sense of duty. So devotional service actually brings us to the platform of duty. Everything belongs to Krishna. So now let us get everything back to Krishna. Right? Okay, here is somebody, he is not a devotee. Let us engage him in devotional service. Then whatever he has will also be engaged in Krishna's service. So in this way we can become free from envy by being engaged in devotional service. Another question? Okay. Envy in devotional service. Well, it can be seen as not envy but competitive spirit. He is such an advanced devotee. At a neophyte stage, and that also will be at a neophyte stage. He is such an advanced devotee. He is rendering so much service to Krishna. Let me also render service to Krishna in the same way, or better than him. Because it is Krishna conscious, it is a positive, competitive spirit. Right. But at a more advanced stage, what will one do? He will feel, oh, he is rendering service so nicely. Let me surrender unto him and help him in his devotional service and derive spiritual benefit out of that. Right? So it will be a matter of different stages of devotion. At a neophyte stage, one may feel envious. But that envy will turn into, can turn into competitive spirit. That is good. He memorized 5 verses. I'll memorize 6 verses too. Right? So that is good. Because it is Krishna conscious. You put Krishna in the center, then envy also will become wonderful. But it should not become self-centered. We should be careful about that. He is rendering so much service and he is being glorified. Why he is being glorified? Why not me? Then Krishna is not the center. Service is not the criteria. It is my sense, self-aggrandizement and sense gratification is the criteria. Then it is envy. It's not Krishna conscious. There was another question here, Chitrangada.
Lesser potencies in the Lord itself, like in Bhagavad Gita 4, which are the precepts for us, how would Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this is not different from Chaitanya, so did he display this potency in his pastimes without recognizing it? Or, you know, there was like this.
You see, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is not presenting himself as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is presenting himself as a devotee of the Lord. Therefore, he is not displaying those qualities. Devotee's qualities, say for example, one quality of Krishna is that he attracts everybody by playing his flute, which Narayan does not. Right? Now, is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu trying to attract everybody towards him by playing flute? No. Rather, what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is doing, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is telling that Krishna is God, worship him. He is not saying that be attracted towards me, but be attracted by Krishna. Right? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is not displaying his opulence like Krishna displays his opulence, but Mahaprabhu did not do that. Rather, Mahaprabhu became a sannyasi. He renounced everything. So that's the difference between Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I mean, if you count those qualities, no, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is not displaying those qualities. But as a devotee, he is presenting like what qualities that can be manifested in a jiva, they are perfectly manifested in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Alright? All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Gaur Premanande Hari Hari.